And historic election night, new leadership in many Treasure Valley communities, and voters say yes and no on numerous initiatives.
Idaho Matters is made possible by Idaho National Laboratory, St. Luke's, Beverly Robertson, and Boise State University.
And historic election night in the capital city as the race for mayor will now go to a runoff, a first for the city of Trees. Numerous initiatives and levies were on the ballot throughout Idaho. We dive into those results. Also, a conversation with outgoing Meridian Mayor Tammy DeVeard as her chief of staff gets set to step into her role. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We will have a full hour of election results and analysis next right here on Idaho Matters. But first, the news from NPR. You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. 46, 30, and 40. Those numbers have significance today after an historic night in the race for Boise mayor. Incumbent Mayor Dave Beter took just about 30% of the vote, trailing Boise City Council President Lauren McLean, who secured 46% of the vote, and a stunning 40% of people turned out to cast their ballot. But since no candidate received the necessary majority, Boise is headed to a runoff election in December, and it will be the first runoff when it comes to a mayor in the city's history. Today on the show, we are bringing you a full hour of election results and what they mean for all of us. We will go outside of Boise to Meridian, to Caldwell, Valley County, Twin Falls, and Blaine County. We will get analysis from experts on these races, and we'll also learn what a runoff election means and how it works, since we all have questions about that. So stay tuned with us. But first, joining us live in studio is Boise mayoral candidate Lauren McLean. She is joining us today after quite a late night. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So first question for you, did you expect to see this kind of margin between you and Mayor Beter?
Well, one never goes into a race with any expectations and definitely doesn't wake up on election morning with expectations to see what we saw last night. I knew when I decided to run in response to what I'd heard from so many people in the community that something was going on and people were looking for new leadership, but we didn't know what that would mean in November.
So now you're headed to a runoff election, and the runoff is set for Tuesday, December 3rd. So what do you focus on between today and December 3rd? I mean, that's less than a month.
Well, I continue to focus on what I've focused on for the last 5 months, which is people. We have knocked on doors. I've texted thousands and thousands of them, had conversations and listening sessions, and we'll do the same thing.
You know, you received an endorsement from Conservation Voters for Idaho, which is a political action committee, and ads were paid for by CVI that, I mean, truly flooded television, flooded Facebook. Without that support, do you think you would have done as well as you did last night?
Well, I should say first off that, of course, I was really grateful for the support. You hope when you step into a race and you share values with organizations that they'll step in with you, but you never know what'll happen. But a candidate and her team has to do everything she can to reach out to voters, to encourage them to engage, and to have a conversation about where we're headed. And we feel really good about what we did.
I'm going to be the devil's advocate a little bit
here.
So the ballot initiatives, these were questions about whether or not voters should weigh in on the library or stadium proposals.
Yeah.
And, you know, during, I've moderated a couple of forums that you were a part of, and also done my own research and finding that in numerous times, I mean, you've made points of not just transparency, which is important in any government, but also that the people should be heard and giving and allowing people to have voice. So when we see these initiatives go on the ballot, that was part of it, having people have their voice heard. Yet right here with our own George Prentice in an interview, you made that point with the interview with him, but then said, but you would be voting no on those initiatives. So the devil's advocate is, how can you say that people should have voice yet vote no on something? Couldn't it be said that you're talking out of both sides of your mouth?
Oh, well, I'm talking about the initiative process and then the right to vote on that process. So no, I think that they're two very different things. Is any citizen has the right to go through the process that Boise Working Together did, get signatures, put a question on the ballot, and then give us the right to vote on that question. And so that's why I was really clear up front, supported the process, but when asked how I would vote, wanted to be honest with how I was voting last night.
So do you want to see a new library?
Of course I want to see a new library.
I want to thank you so much for coming in today, and good luck as you go through this process in the next month.
Well, thank you, Gemma. It's great to be here.
We've been talking with Boise mayoral candidate Lauren McLean. I want to thank you again for coming in. Also, a note, we did reach out to Mayor Dave Beter last week, reached out to his team this morning as well to invite him on the show. They did decline that invitation this morning. We are expected to hear from the mayor around 1 o'clock today on next steps for his campaign as well. We now want to turn our attention to our other in-studio guests. Our own Boise State Public Radio reporters, Madeline Beck and Heath Drusen, are here. They covered election night last night from start to finish, along with Jasper Lacalzi of the College of Idaho and Don Day with Boise Dev. Thanks for joining us.
Hello, everybody.
Hi.
You all had very late nights last night, all of you.
Yeah.
Hey, Madeline and Heath, I want to start with the two of you, because both of you were at the election night parties last night. What was the mood like at the Beter and McLean camps? And Madeline, let's start with you, because you were at the McLean camp, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, it was, I think from the minute I got there a little late just because we were kind of monitoring where the votes were coming into before I headed out to any one of the camps. But I went there and it was packed from the beginning. The Alpenhaus was standing room only when I got there at the very beginning, and just more and more people came. There were no room to park anywhere in the parking lot. People were parking in the middle of the parking lot. And I think people were pretty excited. People were happy. People were wooing every 10 or 15 minutes when more numbers would come in. It was a really jovial atmosphere.
And then Heath, talked to us about what it looked like at the Beter headquarters.
There was plenty of parking around the Basque block last night. It was definitely a tale of two gatherings. So, the party kind of quickly became more of a wake, and people really kind of filtered out early. I think once the results started coming in, I got the sense that people were really surprised. They were really stunned that... Maybe not stunned that there would be a runoff. I think that was in the back of people's minds. But the fact that Lauren McLean did so much better in this initial round, that caught people off guard. And, it wrapped up pretty quickly. And the mayor kind of left without making a final statement. And the mood was somber.
Did you get a chance to speak with the mayor at one point or no?
Yes. So I spoke to him when the results were still coming in. It was still early. He talked to me about the campaign, said they had worked real hard, noted that it was a crowded field for the first time in a long time. But he, even at that point, he really wouldn't talk about a runoff. Mm-hmm. He said, we're going to kind of just take it one election at a time, basically. But then at the end, when I tried to get a final comment from him, when it was clear that there would be a runoff, he was polite, but he walked away and said, no, that's it for the night, basically.
And Madeline, on the flip side of that, what was it like with Lauren McLean in particular? And we just had a chance to chat with her, right now. But I mean, in the midst of those votes coming in.
So I checked with her a couple times during the night. First at the very beginning, when just the numbers just started coming in, the first few precincts were in there, and she was leading. Obviously, that was extremely preliminary. I just asked her how she was feeling, and she said, yeah, that's great, but it's really early, and it's really hard to unseat someone who's been an incumbent, for 16 years. And, very cautious, and then numbers started coming in more and more, and then around the 50-60% of precincts in point, she again said, I am excited, but at the same time, very cautiously optimistic. The way she put it, she's just a cautious person. Mm-hmm. So she was cautiously optimistic, but also just really optimistic. Then at that point, the crowd was getting really excited. I had a few woos here and there just from people who saw me with a microphone.
All right, Don and Jasper, what happened? because I think that that what I have heard over and over again today from numerous people is, wow, could you see that coming?
I didn't see it coming like a month ago when I was here. But then,
yeah, because what did you say a month ago?
I said that Peter would win. There wasn't going to be a runoff, but then I didn't know he wasn't going to run a campaign at all. And I think as we went along was and you saw how energetic she was and on all over social media, doing all the right things, showing up here, doing being everywhere, and he's nowhere, does nothing, has the firefighters do a couple commercials for him, and that's it. Yeah, I'm not surprised. I mean, it's almost like he didn't want to win.
I'm going to take the opposite opinion respectfully. He campaigned, I think, pretty hard. I joked, is there another ribbon to cut in Boise? He's cut fire station ribbons and all sorts of things. They launched the Boise Kind initiative last year, which, of course, is well-timed to put him at the center during election year. The firefighters spent more than $50,000 in TV. Now, that pales in comparison with the $87,500 that conservation voters spent for McClain, but spent a lot. I got 4 mailers from Beter, 4 mailers from McClain. His social media presence was pretty strong. While, you know, I think Jasper makes a point that the campaigns were different, you can look at the propositions and pretty clearly see that the electorate was like, it's time for change. We want to see something different. And Lauren McClain made the case that she was the best person for that to the voters last night.
And I agree that I think if this was 1993, he wins, because that's he ran the same type of race he ran
in 2003.
Exactly. That she's running. She ran the kind of race that you have to do today. I see that's how. Yeah. Jimmy Halliburton did also that. It's you got to get people energized. You got to get them out, especially a low turnout election. I think she was much better. I saw a lot more of her stuff on social media. Maybe I'm not tied into. Peter's not a friend of mine, I guess, but I saw her as doing being more energetic, going after younger people, going after people who hadn't voted before. That's why I didn't. I thought he. He didn't run a good campaign for 2019.
But, you know, Don, you brought up the point about people wanting change. But really, how much change are we going to potentially see with you know, Lauren McClain in office? And that is not a jab at her at all. But when we look at how she has voted, when we look at her voting record, especially on things like the library and all of that, it's very similar to Mayor Beter. So is it one of these things, would you say, that people want change but not too much change?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think what's interesting is throughout this election, Council President McClain made several statements that contrasted with past positions on the library, on the F-35s, on homeless camping, on a number of things. And several times the Beter campaign would come out and say, ha, you're flip-flopping. Which is what you would expect. And she would come back in sort of a jujitsu move and say, I didn't flip-flop. I'm listening. I would imagine that she had internal polling, as I know both the McClain Beter camps had, that said the people wanted somebody to listen. And that was the theme of her campaign. And it seems to have connected.
Well, it seems to resonate with people.
Yeah.
Okay, so before we take a quick break, what about the other candidates? Rebecca Arnold, she got about 13% of the vote. Brent Coles got about 6%. What happens to that 20% come the runoff election on December 3rd?
I think a lot of them don't come out because they didn't like either one of the other two. That's why they voted the way they did. You're going to have lower turnout anyway. And if anything, I think they're not Beters. That's what they're voting for, someone besides the incumbent. So I think if they go anywhere, they're going against Beter.
So I wanted to – I just got a little piece of news I'm going to share here. I texted Phil McGrane today, and I'm just going to be transparent. We haven't heard from the Beter campaign. No social media, no statements. He didn't come on this show today. It's been very quiet. We understand a statement is forthcoming at 1 o'clock. I apologize for people who are listening at 8 o'clock.
Right.
On the replay.
Sorry.
So I texted Phil McGrain, and this is just a – look, I don't know what's going to happen here. But I said, hi, Phil. As a hypothetical, if in a runoff a candidate decides to drop out, what would happen? Is there a cutoff for ballot printing, et cetera? He said, I needed a chance to look at it. If someone were to drop out, there would still be a runoff between the top, between the next two top vote getters. Look, I'm not suggesting that the mayor is going to drop out. I don't know that. I don't know what's going to happen. If he did, there would be a runoff, according to Phil McGrane, between Lauren McClain and Rebecca Arnold.
Because someone has to get that 50%.
50%.
We will actually have Phil on the program a little bit later in this hour. We need to take a quick break. I want to thank our Boise State Public Radio reporters, Madeline Beck and Heath Drusen. Long night last night. Thank you for talking with us in this first part of Idaho Matters. This is Gemma Gaudette. We'll be right back. This is Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We are back with Jasper LaCalzi of the College of Idaho and Don Day with Boise Dev. Okay, so also on the ballot in Boise were two initiatives, and I do promise for our listeners we will be getting out of Boise. Bear with us if you want deeper analysis because we will go outside of the city of Boise. These two initiatives in Boise, they asked voters whether they would like to weigh in on the proposed library and stadium projects. Both needed 50% of the vote to pass. These passed with significantly more than 50%. What were your thoughts when you saw those numbers? And Don, I'll start with you.
I was surprised. I was not surprised to see that the yes vote won. I kind of expected that for two reasons. One, people are pretty fired up. Two, the language was just confusing enough that there could have been some people that were supportive of a library and or a stadium that went in and said, oh, yeah, I like libraries and stadiums, and pushed yes. I'm not insulting the intelligence of the voters. I think it was just
– I will.
It's a little – yeah. However, the Proposition 2 that would require the city to get future voter approval to use more than $5 million towards a stadium, one was 75% of the vote. I don't think that many voters were confused.
No.
The library – Proposition 1 did a little better if you're a library supporter, but still came in at 69% saying the city should come back to the voters if it wants to spend on a library.
What kind of message does this send to the mayor, to the city council, when you see those types of numbers?
That you better get out and get supportive stuff before you vote for it, before you try to push it forward. That I'd be curious. They should have had another issue. Do you support a library? Do you support a sports stadium? Because at least I think for the library it would pass. But I think it's again, we were talking about with Lauren how people wanted to be heard. People want to be heard. They want to. They want to think at least that the candidates or at least the politicians are listening to them and they're doing what they want. And I think especially on a big issue that it's easy for people to comprehend. I mean, there's a lot of issues, whether it's homelessness or traffic or something, which are really difficult to try to – this is easy. Do you want this library? Do you want this sports stadium? People can figure that out. And I don't think – And this goes to some, I think, why people were against Beter was his kind of an arrogance, aloofness that he thinks he knows what's right. He doesn't care about us.
Does that come from being in office for so long?
Tends to. I mean, I think everybody gets that way when they're in there. They think they know things. And they do know things. He does know more about the background, a lot of this stuff, than others. But you get divorced from the public some. I mean, that's the whole argument about term limits and such like that. And I'm not just saying that, you know, Beter is this, you know, completely doesn't care about the people or anything about like that. I think he clearly does. It's they didn't sell it well enough. He didn't get out and really tell people this is why you want to have a library, why you want to have a sports stadium, why this is good.
We live in a representative democracy, and we elect people who are going to make decisions on our behalf. Sometimes I think elected leaders can maybe take that a bit too far. There was a lot of people raising a lot of questions and concerns on the stadium and library. I've covered both of these very closely. Combined between the two of those issues, I've written more than 100 stories in the last 3 years. And when the library was rolled out, they brought the media in one by one. They gave us 45 minutes. They showed us the plans. We asked questions. And we wrote stories. They didn't point out that the library was not on the campus. They didn't point out issues around parking. They didn't point out that the Anne Frank Memorial could be impacted. And it was sort of done quietly and then rolled out to the public. And I don't think that that is a good tactic in a modern era. People want to be involved. I go to city council every single week. There are a lot of people that show up. These Northwest Boise folks that are upset about some development out there, there's often 50 people in the room who have taken time out of their day at 6 o'clock on a Tuesday. They've gotten childcare. They're missing dinner to come testify. People are passionate in this city. They are worried about growth. And these election results show that the voters want to have a say. I don't think we've mentioned the turnout last night, mm-hmm. except for in a polite way.
40%.
40%. That's up 10 points from 4 years ago.
Well, in an off election year as well.
Yes.
Let's talk about the city council races in Boise, because incumbent Elaine Clegg, she retained her seat, while Jimmy Halliburton and Patrick Bajan won. What do you think was notable about these races?
I think the one thing I think with I think Jimmy Halliburton was kind of the outlier to somewhat. He kind of broke some of the mold there. And I think he did it was a lot of grassroots stuff. He had a lot of people working for him. But he also came in with a lot of name recognition and the Boise Bike Project, which is very popular. People really like. So he wasn't just somebody that people hadn't heard of before. And he does a ride with Jimmy, and some people go, not that thrilled with all that stuff. But that people could identify with him. He's a nice guy. He has a great story. And he's made a lot of friends. And that's how you could do something like that. So he kind of bucks some of the money and endorsements and things like that. So that's why I find interesting that it's not always big money coming in and doing stuff. If you really do a lot of the groundwork, you can still win.
Jimmy and Meredith were both strong candidates. They were both very close together in the results.
Incredibly close.
Very close. And if you look at the map on this, mm-hmm. it doesn't really follow what you would expect. It's not like north and east.
That's what surprised me when I looked at the map. Yeah.
And I think Lisa Sanchez told me earlier this year that she recruited Jimmy onto the council. This follows a pattern from Lisa 2 years ago. She ran against Frank Walker for city council. Frank Walker, a known entity here, he had the same kind of backing that the mayor and Meredith has and lost. There's a strain in this town that is interested in seeing different candidates with different points of view.
Okay, so let's talk about that then, because that's true. I mean, you're right about Lisa Sanchez. You're right about Jimmy Halliburton. Even with Lauren McLean getting the amount of the vote that she received last night, that there seems to be a shift in the electorate in what people are thinking. And is this something, could we say there's new Boise versus old Boise? Is this just needing a change of the guard? I mean, what do you think this possibly is? Because there is a shift happening.
Boise State School of Public Policy did a survey this spring that I've gone back to a number of times, and they asked, how do you think your local elected leader is handling growth? And they surveyed across the Treasure Valley, so it's not just specific to Boise. 72% said their local elected leader was doing a fair or poor job of managing growth. You see that in the results in Boise. People are like, you know what? I'm not good with the current guy. I'm going to try somebody else, even though very similar. Mm-hmm. And I just think people are looking for some change. They're fed up with growth. They don't know where to go, and they're trying to have their say at the ballot box.
Well, and we should say that even in Eagle, we saw the incumbent mayor lose that election last night. Jasper, let's head out to Caldwell.
Okay, I'll get the car.
Okay, get the car. We'll be there in about 40 minutes. Former lawmaker John McKee wins a seat on the city council. And when he first put his hat in the ring, I think there were a lot of shocked people and thinking there's no way with the history that he has. Yet maybe some of the best things that happened to him was all the focus on the Boise races.
Well, I think it's something. It was somewhat of a perfect storm too, that he had just the right race to run with the other people who were running against him. He had two other people running against him, so he only needed a plurality. He ran against the state chair of the Democratic Party, was one of the people in there. Okay, she's going to get 30% of the vote. You get that in Canyon County. That's how many Democrats they are. Then he ran against kind of more of the old guard Caldwell people from the old Ralph Smead type groups there who really discredited. But so they just get, so it really worked out well for him that someone's looking for someone who's kind of a moderate in the middle type. He also gets this, I believe people love to see this redemption story. Here is someone who did all these things wrong, but through love of family and God, he able to pull his life together, and look, he's a great. I did a forum out there. You have his wife and his two beautiful kids sitting there and such like that. It's a heartwarming story that people went for.
I don't know if his he had some victims.
I'm not saying anything about that. But what I'm also saying, and there are never McGeers. Who are out there who can't forgive themselves. But there are some who have.
But how much does this also go back to the idea that if you have moved into this area in, let's say, the last 5 years, like we've seen, 25% of the population in the Treasure Valley, you don't know the backstory.
Yeah, I think most people do. I think it was pushed out a great deal. Yeah. I think people really did. But I think, again, it's like people want to have this optimistic story with that, and that's what they voted for. Yeah. That's why some voted for that, and there was others I know who will never vote for him under any circumstance. That's why I think if he was running one-on-one against somebody else, I don't know if he gets 50%.
And the vast majority of voters in that race pick somebody else.
Yes,
but they split the vote.
Exactly.
And
that's what I'm saying.
That's how it works.
Everything worked perfectly for him, that it wasn't that there was two other people in the race, and who those other two people were made it that he, with all his baggage, is still seen as the kind of moderate person in the race. It just worked out perfectly for him.
We're going to take a quick break and continue our analysis on election night. New mayor in Meridian, but also numerous levies and other initiatives that we want to get to. You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We want to turn our eyes now to the city of Meridian, where longtime mayor Tammy DeVeard did not run again. However, she did give her endorsement to her longtime chief of staff, Robert Simonson. Mayor DeVeard is joining us by phone right now. Thank you so much for taking some time out of your day.
Hi, Jana. It's great. It's a beautiful day outside, and we're excited for the future of Meridian.
So your chief of staff, Robert Simonson, won the election last night. How do you feel today knowing that he will take over the reins from everything that you have done and the legacy that you have left?
Well, I'm excited for the future of our community. And, you know, Robert has been an integral part and member of our team. And I know that he's going to care for this community as I have. It's going to be a little bit different, but different is good. And the transition in and of itself is going to be so much smoother.
Is there something, like maybe a policy or an initiative, that you hope that he continues from your time in office?
Oh, absolutely. There's three initiatives that were started when I first came into office that have been very important to our community, and I believe that they have been an important part of our brand, and that is our focus on family and youth, our focus on collaboration with various groups, our faith community, our business community, our school communities, and our efforts in substance abuse and prevention and treatment and those kind of things. Those are all well established, but he has been involved in them, and I believe that he will be carrying those forth.
So what are your plans after leaving office? You're going to take a little time off, and are we going to see you again? Or, you know, is this like, you know, you're ready just to maybe wrap things up and open up a new chapter?
Well, I will continue to live in Meridian. I will definitely continue to care about this community. And I have already told our elected officials. I will be keeping an eye on things. We have definite challenges here in Meridian with the growth not only of our community but the entire valley. And we need to be working together and not just in the community with our residents, but also with our neighboring communities in the counties. And I'm hopeful. Representative Palmer ran for the mayor. He expressed his love and his desire to be part of a transportation solution. And I'm hoping that he's going to be working with Robert to move forward on some of those promises.
I want to thank you so very much for taking some time to talk with us. Always nice to hear from you. And I'm sure we'll be chatting with you before you officially leave office. We've been talking.
I hope so.
I hope so, too. We've been talking with Meridian Mayor Tammy DeVere. Her chief of staff, Robert Simonson, was elected into office last night to be the next leader of that city. We now want to head to South Central Idaho for some continuing coverage there. Our Rachel Cohen is joining us from Twin Falls right now with the very latest on those races. So, Rachel, you were following, what races were you following last night in particular in Twin Falls and in Blaine counties?
Yes. Well, we didn't have anything quite like what you had in Boise well, last night, but we were following the Twin Falls City Council race, looking at some bond issues, both in Twin Falls and in Ketchum, and then City Council elections in the Wood River Valley, too.
Okay, so let's talk about the Twin Falls jail bond. This needed a super majority, right? A 2/3 of the vote. So what happened?
That's correct. A majority did vote in favor of the bond, but it wasn't enough to get this vote passed. It came in about 58% of voters voted in favor of the jail bond. So the commissioners are going to have to go back to the drawing board on that. There's a chance there might be another vote sometime in the future. But for right now, some of those issues still remain that they were trying to work out with this bond.
And then Twin Falls City Council and Mayor, what do we know about those today?
Yes, so we had 11 candidates vying for 4 seats on the council. 3 of those seats had incumbent candidates, and they all won back their seats. And that includes the mayor, Sean Berger, who did have to reclaim his council seat last night, and he did so. So that puts him at least in the running to become mayor for another 2 years. But as we've discussed, the council will select the mayor in January.
So what about Blaine County? There were several seats open for a school board, for a school trustee, and this has been a bit contentious.
Yeah, the school board is something that has been talked about pretty frequently over the past year. This race in particular wasn't super contested because of the 3 open seats, only one had more than one candidate running. So there was only one contested seat. The other 2 were already shoo-ins for that. So last night, Amber Larna beat Alexis Lindbergh for 1 trustee seat on the school board. So in January, there will be 3 new members of that board.
I want to thank you for your reporting, Rachel. We're going to let you go, and we're going to now turn to Valley County. Let's connect with Valley County Commissioner Sherry Maupin. She is joining us to talk about a levy that would have placed a higher tax on property owners, most of whom don't actually live in Valley County. Commissioner Maupin, thanks so much for taking some time out of your day.
You bet. Pleasure to join you.
So you were here live in studio with us last week talking about this levy. So for people who might have missed that interview, what was the aim of this levy and what problem would it have fixed?
So we are trying to find a stable funding source for our road department. And this is a result of loss of federal funds through the Safe Rural Schools initiative. And we have, in the past few years, just been on a road maintenance program, doing very, very basic work to our roads. And we are trying to find a source of funding which allows us to continue that maintenance, continue our snow plowing program, and potentially work together to build some new roads for the future.
So it did need a supermajority to pass, so 2/3 of the vote. It did receive a majority of votes, but it did not pass, correct?
That is correct. We would have required 67%.
So what does this mean now for Valley County?
Well, what it means is we need to have more public input to the process. So we are going to, well, we haven't met yet to decide future steps, but I'm speaking for my behalf. We are starting a strategic planning committee, which will include a lot of the employees within the county and invite in some of the public to help us plan for the future. And this is going to have to be one part of that conversation. And also the road department needs to go in and find out exactly which roads are priority, which ones have to be fixed, which ones have to be plowed. So there's going to be a full overview of our road department and division and our roadmap, and make sure that we're trying to do as much as we can with the funding that we have.
Do you think you will try to put this on the next election?
You know, that hasn't been determined, and I think it actually is going to be a lot of work with the public before we do that. That is certainly one option, but we want to make sure that it's the right timing for our voters and that they understand exactly what it is we're trying to accomplish. I think they need more information. I think they need to know what plans we have, which roads we're going to be working on first. So I think there's a lot of planning before we make that decision.
I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We've been talking with Valley County Commissioner Sherry Maupin. Thanks again for your time. And before we take a quick break, Jasper and Don, we also saw the Napa School Board trying to pass a levy. So we've got no. Surprised by these results?
Not in Idaho.
No.
That's depressing.
But I think you have to really sell it. I mean, I'm out in Caldwell. They pass a levy every time, and which you wouldn't think that they would. But if you, I think the commissioner would have done what she says she was going to do now. If she'd done it already, it might have passed. So you have to really lay the groundwork. You can't just throw it on the ballot and expect people to accept it.
If there's a theme in Idaho Matters today, it is that voters across the region want to have input on the process as it goes along, and it is showing up in elections all over the place.
And I think I think you're right completely that it's the process that even if you come out with the same thing, it's they want to feel that they've had input and you've listened to them, and even if it's still the stadium or a road.
Even if it ends up being the same.
Exactly, thing. That they've been heard.
So up next, we will be talking with an Ada County election official about how the high turnout in Boise and in Eagle. We'll talk about that specifically, but then we're going to find out exactly how this runoff election will work and also who pays for it. I'm Gemma Gaudet. This is Idaho Matters. This is Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudet. Joining us in studio to continue our election coverage is College of Idaho Professor Jasper LaCalzie. I didn't even stay up late last night. Boise Dev's Don Day. We're also joined by Ada County Clerk Phil McGrain. Happy birthday, Phil.
Thank you.
Day after Election Day, you know? Okay.
I'm here hard at work, too.
He's got his vote pin on.
He does. Look at this.
I voted today, too.
Hey, now, don't start any rumors, Jasper. Okay, let's look at the turnout in Ada County specifically, Phil, because Boise had a 40% turnout. This is atypical of an off season.
Yeah, this is extremely high turnout. I think you saw that in a couple of the hot areas. Boise had really high turnout, especially kind of the northeast end of the city. Also Eagle, 42% turnout in the city of Eagle and also in the city of Star.
So we have something historic going on in Boise, which is this mayoral runoff. So walk us through how this works, because one of the questions we have is from a listener from Twitter, LH, wanting to know, can we vote absentee?
Yeah, so it's a huge undertaking for our office. I've already had meetings this morning, and people are working on the runoff as we speak. It's a huge logistics operation. Most people don't think of elections in this way, but we're the largest event planning operation in the state of Idaho. Mm. I mean, effectively, if you think we just held events at 150, I'm a giant party planner. And so there's a lot that goes into it, and we're going to pack about 4 to 5 months worth of work into the next 30 days. So there's a lot of people hard at work trying to make that all happen. We will still try to put the normal election process in this 30-day window. Some things that makes it difficult. So normally we mail absentee ballots 45 days before an election.
You can't do that.
We can't do that here. So we anticipate that we'll have absentee ballots going out on Tuesday when the post, we'll have them ready on Monday, but to go out. So we're going to mail absentee ballots to all those who requested ones for the city election, because this is really an extension of the city election that's already occurred. People can still request an absentee ballot up until Friday the 22nd. So we'll process all of those. We will still have early voting.
Oh, you will? I was going to ask. Okay, so
we're
going to
have early voting. We'll have 2 weeks of early voting. This makes it a little bit unique. We're going to close for one day because it's Thanksgiving, and that's just, you know, a reasonable expectation.
I mean, look, you're working on your birthday, so you should at least get Thanksgiving.
Exactly.
All right. So what about the day of the election on December 3rd? Do you have to have every precinct open? What are the laws surrounding that?
Do we have to? No. Are we going to? Yes. Right. We've made it was a policy decision when we consolidated elections and our office took them over to make it consistent and predictable for voters. And so one of the best ways to do that is have the same place to vote. So we're working right now to lock in all the polling locations. So it should be your regular polling location on the runoff day, which will be December 3rd. If for some reason something changes, it's simply because we can't get a facility, and we will notify all registered voters of that change.
And even if you didn't vote, you can still vote.
That's correct. Yeah. This could have an entirely different looking electorate when it comes to the runoff.
So in the beginning of the program, Don Day had mentioned that the two of you had exchanged some text messages. And no, and some...
Now public now.
I know,
text a reporter and somebody's will come out their mouth.
This is what happens. But a really interesting point is that because, you know, speculating here completely is if for some reason, you know, let's say Mayor Beter decides, you know what, the numbers favor Lauren McClain, I'm going to step away, she does not automatically win the election.
I believe that's true. I think that, as you already noted, we're kind of in hypotheticals here.
Right,
and I've got a lot of real things that we're trying to tackle. But
thanks for humoring
that
us.
That being said, the way the statute reads and the way the city ordinance read, the purpose of these provisions is to have someone with a majority of the support. And right now, no candidate has a majority of the votes. And so I believe a runoff would still occur. I'm not very confident that this is something we're going to be contending with. We'll see what happens over the next few days. I will say, just on the going back to the logistics side, we're going to be printing ballots this weekend. So the elections, the window for this conversation
this
is extremely narrow. Yeah.
So cost of this runoff.
Yeah, we're thankful the city of Boise is going to pick up the bill. Right. Normally, we pay for all these costs. We've been told them to plan for $100,000. It could kind of be a little less, could be a little bit more. But elections are a major undertaking. We'll have 88 precincts in use for this election. And that includes poll workers and all the ballot costs and everything that go with running.
I'm going to give you another hypothetical. What if you have to do what if you have to do a recount?
That unfortunately, that's a real possibility in this situation. We did have some close races. A lot of people have focused on the mayoral races, but we had a close race in the Eagle Fire District as well as CUNA City Council. So we're monitoring that. It's already a strain on our office. If we also have a recount, this is going to be especially interesting.
Can you talk about the 2003 city runoff for the council seat and the turnout differences there?
Because we did see a runoff election one other time, correct? And this was the 2003 city council election in Boise.
Yeah, that's the prior instance. So much has changed, though, so it's tough to make any sort of apples-to-apples comparisons. Elections as a nation have been overhauled. So 2003 was just after Bush v. Gore in 2000. None of the changes had been implemented yet. So just as an industry, it doesn't look the same. So, for example, that election was run by the city of Boise back then, where now all the elections are run by the county. And so there's a lot of differences in how that worked, how well-informed voters were. So I just don't think that's going to be a good bellwether for what we're going to see. What we do see nationally, though, is runoff elections usually have depressed turnout compared to the actual election. What we've seen from different studies is about a quarter of the voters who voted yesterday will likely show up for the runoff. You know, with the energy that's going on here locally, though, I could see it being more than that. We'll certainly be prepared for a lot more. But it'll be interesting to see how different that electorate is when it comes to the actual runoff.
I think it's going to be fascinating. This is right after the Thanksgiving holiday.
Right.
Holiday season is kicking up. It's not you know, a typical
and throw weather in there.
That's what I said this morning. What if there's a snowstorm?
There's only one race on the ballot.
So, Phil, but how do you pick that day? Because I think there are people that are wondering, how do we pick? It's not a random day, we should say.
Oddly, it's not that far off from what you just described either. I mean, of course, it's not.
You just put a date in the hat and pick it out?
Thursday.
Yeah, to a certain degree. So the statute just simply says it has to happen within 30 days. And actually, the city ordinance gets to define it. Here, the city of Boise's ordinance doesn't address the issue. So we met with the city attorney's office and worked through. It was our suggestion that December 3rd be the date. That gives us the most possible time. It puts it on a Tuesday, which is predictable. Arguably, it could have been on a Monday or a different day. It just seems like that wouldn't be doing, that would be a disservice to the public because they're used to voting on Tuesdays.
I have to wrap everybody up. Thank you all so very much for coming in, for your time today. Our guests today, Jasper Lacalzi, professor with the College of Idaho, Don Day with Boise Dev, Ada County Clerk Phil McGrain joining us to help us understand how this runoff will work.
And a cast of thousands.
I know, right? We had everything for everyone. Thank you so very much for listening. We could not do this show without all of you, especially those of you that engage with us on social media. Thank you so much. Our producers, Frankie Barnhill and Samantha Wright. I'm Gemma Gaudette. It's Wednesday. It's a beautiful day. Go out there and enjoy it. We'll see you back here tomorrow.